And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, Command the children of Israel that they bring unto thee pure oil olive beaten for the light, to cause the lamps to burn continually in the tabernacle of the congregation. And it shall be a statute forever in your generations.
The Eternal Light. The National Broadcasting Company and its affiliated independent stations present The Eternal Light, a program which comes to you under the auspices of the Jewish Theological Seminary of America. Our program today, A Word of Advice from the Zoo, was written by Mark Siegel.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are speaking to you direct from the Biblical Zoo in Jerusalem, where a distinguished audience of animals is assembling at the moment for a unique and historic broadcast. The first live appearance before the microphone of a notoriously close-mouthed public figure, the King of Beasts, His Majesty the Lion. While the lion has in the past made certain statements for public consumption, these have been limited in the main to unintelligible roars emitted for the pleasure of children visiting the Biblical Zoo with their parents. And so his announced appearance today on our network has aroused a considerable degree of curiosity and interest within the animal community here, which, as you can probably hear, is making a characteristic racket. Now, while we wait for His Majesty, perhaps I should point out some of the better-known residents of the Biblical Zoo and, if possible, get one or two of them to say a few words comment one way or the other on the unusual occurrence taking place here today. Seated in the second row of the brilliantly lit cage auditorium here is a group of red foxes, descendants of the little foxes who, as you may recall from your Bible, spent a good deal of their time spoiling the vines. Gentlemen, do you have any reaction to this decision of His Majesty the Lion to broadcast today? I see. No comment. Now here comes the zoo's raven. Perhaps we can get him to talk. Sir.
Are you addressing me?
Oh, yes, sir. Our radio audience would be very much interested, I'm sure, in knowing how you, the raven, feel about
the lion making this broadcast.
Oh, yes, sir, that's it, exactly.
Well, I come from a very conservative family.
It was one of your ancestors that fed Elijah in the wilderness, wasn't it?
Yes, that's right. All of us in the zoo are descendants of birds and beasts mentioned in the Bible, you know.
Oh, yes, I know that, of course. But you were saying, sir...
I was saying I come from a very conservative family. On the other hand, our association with men of wisdom, Elijah, for example, has given us a certain tradition of democracy.
And so you feel the lion has
Please,
a perfect
sir,
right to...
don't put words in my beak. On the one hand, if he wants to talk, he has a right to. On the other hand, my conservative upbringing suggests to me that he should keep his mouth shut.
Thank you. Thank you very much. As you can see, there's a division of opinion here as the animals of the Biblical Zoo wait for their acknowledged leader, His Majesty the Lion, to make his first appearance before our microphone. His Majesty should be here momentarily for this first precedent-breaking broadcast, which is being brought to you by... Oh, just a moment. Just a moment. That applause at the rear of the cage no doubt indicates that the lion has arrived. Oh, yes. Yes, I can see him now making his dignified way on all fours up the center aisle. He is receiving a considerable ovation, as you can probably hear. And now he's taking his place on the podium before the microphone. He's just tossed his mane once or twice in a gesture asking for silence. As the audience settles back on its haunches, he's flicking his tail with some impatience. Ladies and gentlemen, the King of Beasts, His Majesty the Lion.
My friends, there are some members of the kingdom, I refer to our animal kingdom, of course, who consider it inappropriate, injudicious, indiscreet, and in the long run a waste of time for the king of beasts to speak to the world of men. But a lion, I should tell you, despite the evidence to be found on the steps of certain public libraries, is not made of stone. There comes a point, in short, when even the most restrained beast, observing the affairs of men, feels a compulsion to speak out. Perhaps what the world needs is just a little old plain garden variety, unadorned but to the point, animal wisdom. Now, I see in the fourth row a camel, whose many times great-grandfather was watered by Rebecca. Camel.
Yes, Your Majesty?
Please, we're being informal here.
Sorry?
Camel, your many times great-grandfather frequently carried the patriarch Isaac through the desert, I understand.
Well, sure he did. That was his job.
And no doubt he listened to the wisdom of Isaac as he carried him.
Of course, but begging your pardon, we all know that. The capacity of a camel for silent listening is almost as great as the capacity of a camel to hold water.
Please, I'm trying to make a point. Tell me, camel, how much of Isaac's wisdom are you familiar with?
Most of it, I guess.
You guess?
Most of it, I'm sure. My father was a natural-born teacher, and his father, too, and so on and so on.
Thank you. Beasts and birds, and those human beings who are listening in, that is the significant point. In this zoo are descendants of lambs that were tended by Moses, descendants of the dove that Noah sent out from the ark to seek the dry land, descendants of gazelles who knew the wise king Solomon well. I believe that I can say without fear of contradiction that in this august assemblage of animals, there is an accumulation of age-old wisdom which qualifies us to speak in this crucial moment to the world of men. I ask for a vote of confidence on this grave issue.
Speaking directly from the Biblical Zoo in Jerusalem, His Majesty the Lion has made a dramatic impression on his audience, as you can no doubt hear. Whatever opposition to his broadcast may have existed earlier today appears to have crumbled completely. But I believe he is ready to continue with his address.
Thank you, my friend. I will not go back into ancient history in this discourse, although, of course, I could if I wished to. I will instead confine myself to my own experience and ask my listeners to extend their imaginations backwards a mere 10 years, backwards only to 1947. On a lovely summer afternoon of that year, I was lolling in my cage, thinking of nothing at all, just gazing down into the valley from the campus of the Hebrew University on Mount Scopus, where I was being exhibited at the time, when the chief professor and his assistant, Yakov, chanced along. Naturally, I couldn't help overhearing them. Not that I'm an eavesdropper, you understand, but they were right in front of my cage.
Yes, Professor, I think you're right.
He's a fine specimen, Yakov, a perfect specimen.
Obviously intelligent, too, I'd say, Professor.
Rare, very rare.
Belongs right here in the center of the zoo where everyone can see him, I'd say.
Agreed, Yakov, agreed. Listen to our lion, Yakov. He sounds as happy as a tabby cat in front of a fire.
Yes, you're right, Professor. Look at him. It's ridiculous, but...
But what, Yakov?
Well, sometimes I think that someday that lion is going to open his mouth and talk to us. If I didn't know better, I'd say he was smiling at us right this minute.
Naturally, I was smiling. When people you respect say you're obviously intelligent, a perfect specimen, and very rare, you smiled. Unfortunately, it turned out that it wasn't me they meant at all. They were talking about a new neighbor they were putting in the adjoining cage that very afternoon.
That's it, friend. This way. In here. Now, now, you'll feel at home soon. That's it.
I'm not exactly an unfriendly type, but it's difficult to be hospitable to someone else about whom people say nice things. You didn't look obviously intelligent, very rare, or like a perfect specimen to me. He just looked like what he was, a small, ridiculously small, light brown bear. The next day, they brought his mate to the cage. I had ignored the newcomer, but when it comes to the ladies, well, if a lion isn't gallant, he's nothing.
Hi.
Hello there. Welcome to our zoo.
Well, that's real sweet the way you say that. I don't believe I've had the pleasure of hearing your name.
Sometimes they call me Arye, sometimes Laish, but I prefer to be called Judah. To whom, by the way, I've been compared in the Bible.
Judah. Well, that's a lovely name.
Thank you. Might I inquire after yours?
Fatima. My husband's name is Abdo.
Fatima. Abdo. That's an odd set of names.
Well, maybe here in Jerusalem, Judah, but not where we came from.
I don't quite understand. Only animals mentioned in the Bible are supposed to be admitted here.
Well, we're mentioned in the Bible, of course, you silly old lion. I hope you don't mind my being so familiar with you. It's just my way.
Oh, I don't mind at all. But where do you come from to have a name like Fatima? Fatima?
From just a little ways, Judah. From Syria. Our family name is Ursus Syriacus. We're Syrian bears.
It didn't take very long for me and the rest of our zoo community to become very fond of that charming Fatima. And after a while, we even liked Abdo. The two little bears and I became, in fact, and I trust I offend no one here by saying so, the favorites of the children who visited the zoo. But in the autumn of 1947, quite suddenly, the children stopped coming to the zoo. We found out why soon enough. One night, I was pacing my cage. I'd been feeling rather restless. And suddenly...
Judah! Judah, what is that?
There were flashes in the sky, and the earth shook, and tremendous sounds. But I couldn't answer. None of us could. This was something new in our animal world. It took a long time before the words siege and bombardment found their way into our vocabularies. Long before we knew the words, we knew their meaning. In the days that followed, while the bullets whizzed through our zoo on Mount Scopus, it was my sad duty as chief of the animal community to receive the unhappy reports.
Judah?
I hear you, Camel.
The leopard is dead.
Of old age, perhaps?
No, Judah. Of men.
Raven, reporting is directed, sir.
No need for military courtesy, Raven.
Okay, Judah. The situation in my sector's snafu. Honest to goodness, bad.
How bad?
Very bad. The casualty list reads like the passenger list.
What passenger list, Raven?
The passenger list, Judah, of Noah's Ark.
What the bullets and shells didn't accomplish, the siege of Mount Scopus did. All food supplies were cut off. For a while, we were placed in the awkward, I might say indelicate, position of eating our late friends. Then they, too, were gone. Those of us with spirit made little jokes about our situation.
Judah?
Yes, Fatima.
I do believe dinner's a bit late this evening.
Better late than never, I hope.
Camel, there is a limit.
To what, Raven?
To being ravenous.
Why, Fatima, you're singing.
So I am, Judah.
You're a lady of real courage, Fatima. To be truthful, I find it difficult to sing or even roar on an empty stomach.
So do I, Judah. But I've realized the most darling thing about this diet, or lack of it.
You have?
Mm-hmm. It does help a bear to keep her girlish figure.
It was true. Fatima's figure had become stylishly slim, so had mine. And we weren't the only ones who realized it.
What are you doing?
Hmm? Oh, nothing, Professor. Nothing at all.
Then what is Fatima eating?
Fatima? Is she eating something?
Yakov, you don't fool me a bit. You've given her your ration again.
Oh, well, perhaps I have. But I saw you do the same thing yourself yesterday.
Oh, you did?
Yes, toward evening.
Well, why shouldn't I have, Yakov? Doesn't the Talmud tell us, do not eat before you have fed your beast?
Some days there was food and some days there was nothing. Occasionally a convoy would get through to Mount Scopus and there'd be food for a week. But by May, when the war started in earnest, there wasn't a scrap for dinner for any of us. Yakov kept coming out to see us even under fire. And it seemed to me that he lingered each time longest before the cage in which Fatima and Abdul were quartered.
Oh, look at these poor beasts. Their bones are practically coming through their skin.
So are yours, Yakov.
Yeah, a good many of me, Professor.
There are a good many animals in the world, too, Yakov.
Camels, yes. Ravens, yes. Even lions, yes. But not Syrian bears.
We'll do our best to save them. That's the best we can do.
Professor, we've got to save these bears. There are only four left in the whole world.
We'll save them, Yakov, some way. Still, there is something odd about it, I'd say.
Odd? What's odd?
Here we are, Yakov, sitting on top of Mount Scopus, being shot at by invaders from five countries. Our little state is struggling to survive. And what are you and I worrying about? Trying to save a pair of bears named Abdul and Fatima. Doesn't it seem odd to you that we should be trying to preserve a pair of Syrian bears?
Professor, I'm afraid there's only one thing left to do.
To save the bears?
Yes.
What have you got in mind?
Well, I...
You don't seem eager to tell me.
No, I'm not. Ah, well, where should I be? Professor.
Yes, Yakov.
I'm afraid we may have to feed the lion to the bears.
This particular tidbit of intelligence, I need not tell you, did not sit very well with me. I remember consoling myself briefly, however, with a few well-chosen platitudes. If one must die, I told myself, it's better to die for science than for nothing. I began to rehearse certain final lines. It is a far, far better thing I do, and so on and so on. I paced my cage and considered the matter carefully. Finally, I came to a decision. A lion is a symbol of courage, of strength, of majesty, I told myself, remembering my father's teachings. If no one else will do the job, I must. Terrible responsibility, being a lion. I waited until the professor and Yakov had gone, and then prepared to leave the zoo and forage for food for the other animals. Very carefully, I stuck my paw through the bars, reaching for the cage door latch to open it, when...
Ouch!
Judah! You've been hit!
It's nothing, Fatima. Just a superficial flesh wound. Nothing at all.
Can you get your paw back through the bars?
I'm trying. Fatima, kindly go to the other end of your cage.
But why, Judah? I want to help.
You'll help most if you don't listen to me. It's not my idea of dignified behavior to say ouch. And I can't get this paw back through the bars without saying it.
All right, Judah.
To the professor's ears, my ouch, which was actually quite controlled, I assure you, sounded like the roaring of a lion in pain. And he came running.
Yakov! Yakov! The The lion has been shot through the leg.
Yakov came almost immediately with a box full of first aid equipment.
Yakov, I don't think that's advisable.
Well, he's hurt, isn't he?
Of course he's hurt.
Then I'm going to disinfect his leg and bandage it.
Yakov, he hasn't eaten in days. You can't go into that cage with him.
I have to, Professor.
But only this morning you said we might have to feed him to the bears.
Well, that's different. Now, please step away from the cage. I'm going into it.
He came into my cage and I tried not to frighten him. He repaired my leg while the professor watched nervously from outside. And Fatima watched curiously from next door.
Hello, friend. All right, Professor. You'll be all right now.
Is it better now, Judah?
A great deal better, thank you.
He was very brave to go into your cage, don't you think?
It's been done before. A fellow named Daniel, remember?
Of course, but Daniel was thrown in, wasn't he? I mean, Yakov went in of his own choice.
There's a biblical law, Fatima. That's why he did it, I guess.
What kind of biblical law, Judah?
Well, it says that to relieve an animal of pain or danger is as important, for instance, as observing the Sabbath.
Why, that's very interesting. That's really interesting. You know, Judah, if I ever get back to Syria...
Yes?
If I ever get back to Syria, I must tell the folks who live there about that.
Well, Fatima hasn't got back to Syria. She's right here with us today in the biblical zoo. So is Abdul. And the camel and the raven. And almost 400 animals who have taken the place of those who fell on Mount Scopus. Somehow, with the help of the UN and our own spirit, we survived and got down off Mount Scopus to our present quarters here in Jerusalem. But I tell this story to the world of men in this broadcast, not to point out the heroism of Yakov and the professor, or the courage of the 19 of us who survived. I am delivering this address because it seems to me that if the lion and a pair of Syrian bears can become great friends, anything is possible. I don't make a practice of quoting from the Bible frequently, but I understand that almost everyone else who's appeared on this network has, and I wouldn't want to be an exception. So I refer you in closing to the vision of Isaiah. A vision of a time in which the earth shall be full of the knowledge of the Lord, and none shall hurt nor destroy in all the Lord's holy mountain. In that day it is said, the leopard shall lie down with the kid, and the calf and the young lion together, and the cow and the bear shall feed together. That is the vision of a time to come. And our word of advice from the zoo is this. The leopard is willing to lie down with the kid, the bear is prepared to feed with a cow, and I am willing to lie down with a calf. Anytime you're ready. Anytime at all.
This special program has come to you by courtesy... Oh, I'm sorry. I see that our time is up. We return you now to our studios in New York. This has been a special broadcast in the public interest direct from the Biblical Zoo in Jerusalem by remote pickup. Alive, of course. If you would like a copy of today's script, please send your name and address with 10 cents to cover the cost of postage and handling to the Jewish Theological Seminary of America, 3080 Broadway, New York 27, New York. And now we take great pleasure in presenting Dr. Abraham J. Feldman, President of the Synagogue Council of America, and now actively engaged in behalf of the Red Cross campaign. Rabbi Feldman.
Ladies and gentlemen, the concluding words of the lion in the parable to which we just listened, to the effect that he is ready and eager to fulfill his symbolic destiny proclaimed in the vision of Isaiah. These words need to be heard in today's world. There seems to be a conspiracy of silence on this subject, a silence both revealing and ominous. It is revealing in that in so many areas of conflict in the world, partisans prefer not to have the possibility of friendship between themselves and their neighbors even spoken of. Over and over again does it happen that one party in a controversy offers to sit down with its opponents in the hope of effectuating an enduring peace in a given troubled part of the world. "I am willing," said the lion in our parable. "Any time you are ready, any time at all." But the others are unwilling. They reject every offer of friendliness. They would rather be mad. They'd rather their own people suffered. They would rather perpetuate misery as a political propaganda weapon than by discarding it gain human dignity and happiness for those whose miserable lot is exceedingly pathetic. And the refusal to establish peace is, of course, ominous for the whole world. For to doom millions of people to uselessness when not a glimmer of hope for a better life in the foreseeable future exists is to irritate a festering sore which can only add to the travail of the world. This revealing an ominous silence about the unquestioned eagerness of some aggrieved peoples to establish friendly relations with their neighbors, this silence must be broken. And when it is broken, then may it come to pass that the moral judgment of the world would be marshaled to the end that peace and prosperity and blessings which challenge the imagination may ensue for the good of all and the hurt of none. This is a consummation devoutly to be sought.
Thank you, Rabbi Feldman. Eternal Light Drama Today, A Word of Advice from the Zoo, was written by Mark Siegel. Cantor David Futterman sang the liturgical introduction. Featured in the cast were Stotz Cotsworth as the lion, Ruby Dee as the lady bear, Norman Rose as the announcer, John McGovern as the professor, William Griffiths as Yakov, Philip Sterling as the raven, and Wendell Holmes as the camel. This is Bill Hanrahan speaking. Our program was directed by Kenneth McGregor. This weekly program is presented under the auspices of the Jewish Theological Seminary of America. When disaster or war in any part of the world creates untold human misery, the Red Cross...